All right, I'm going to get started. Oh, you ready? Okay. Okay. Again, I'm Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. So far we've been focusing on what's happening out here, the behavior that's happening outside of me. It's behavior that probably people that were close to me could see, the lack of control and the results of the lack of control. There was one point, though, is that I saw that I drank too much, but what I didn't see is that I could never start drinking without drinking too much. Right? I didn't see the point that they're trying to make here is that I can't start without drinking too much. And by this time in the book, in the bottom of page 22, it's gonna sum it all up for us. Every time the book shifts to a different direction or a different area, it's gonna summarize what we're supposed to see, and then start the next paragraph up with posing a consideration for what we're about to talk about. So in the bottom of page 22, what it says is, we know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink as much as he may do for months or years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both in the bodily and mental sense which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. So the question here is, does my experience abundantly confirm that once I take any alcohol into my system, something happens in the bodily and mental sense which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop? Right? And by this point, I should have examined my drinking experience and seen that there was many times in my drinking career that I just kept overshooting the mark in spite of the repercussions in my life, right? The effects that it had in my work, the effects that it had in my relationships, the effect it had in the aspirations and dreams that I had for myself that I could never live up to. I never really grasped how much alcohol influenced all of that stuff, right? So I see through my experience drinking how my life has been affected by how much I drank. If I drank every day, that wouldn't necessarily be a problem if I had one drink every day. It wouldn't have impacted my life the way it did, physically, right? My life is a result of excessive drinking, right? You don't lose businesses or relationships or dreams from having a drink a day. You just don't, right? So kind of looking back behind me, I see this trail of destruction. And I have to be clear about that at this point. What was the effect on my life, the physical manifestations of my problem? It goes on to say on the top of 23, it says, these observations would be academic, meaning it's important to know, and pointless if you just never took the first drink, setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. Right? I could see that with my other friends that drank along with me. Some could drink just as much as me, get in just as much trouble. Right? But when certain situations happened in their life, they just said, I can't do that anymore. You know, or I can only do that on Friday nights and stop by Sunday, so I'm okay for work on Monday, right? Lose control, go out of control all weekend, but can say, okay, I have to get up for work in the next morning, and I'm not going to drink tonight, right? But for me, I couldn't do that. There was something else. Why is it when I saw the lack of control and the devastation in my life, why didn't I just stop? That becomes the question for the next section we're going to look at. What happened before I start to take the drink? Right? We've all had experiences with stopping for periods of time. having really good intention, why, you know, that I'm going to get my life together. I'm going to straighten things out. I'm going to get, you know, straighten things out with the wife. I'm going to pull the work back together. I'm just going to change, right? You know, why is it that out of nowhere comes this idea that it'd be okay to have a drink? In spite of all the proof of my experience going on around me, something comes up to my, in my mind that says, a drink won't hurt me, right? And that's true. One drink won't hurt you if you could pull that off, right? But I had to see that there's this other thing that's going on besides all this lack of control, but there's this mental condition, this thing that sent this problem that centers in my mind and not in my body. I always suffered from this obsession that it talks about, end of the second paragraph where it says, there is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game. I always thought that the day would come when just the right things would just align, whether it be in the stars or in my life or at home or at work, or where I just, everything would just be okay, and that day just never came. In the bottom of the page it says, the tragic truth is that if the man be a real alcoholic, the happy day may not arrive. Right? There was always the hope that something would be different. Right? And as long as I go through life thinking that there's hope, that there's something different, then I'll be able to relate to the kind of insanity that you hear people talk about in meetings, where they say that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Right? The idea that something's going to change, something's going to adjust, or, you know, whatever, it's just everything will come together. But see, this is the section where it's got to take me beyond that place, because as long as I think that there's hope, I'm not clear on a first step. As long as I think I'm doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, right, then something's still missing. Right? It says on the top of 24, it's going to talk about the idea of choice. You hear that a lot. Today I choose not to drink. It says here that the fact is that most alcoholics, for reason yet obscured, have lost the power of choice in drink. It says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into the consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Right? If I could choose to not drink, then it's implying that I have the power to do so. It's implying I have the ability to do that, to do so. If I'm here, it's probably because the idea that I had the ability to do so, it was shattered way before I even got here. Right? And then other people might tell you, just think the drink through. Just think through the consequences, right? How many times did you go to buy more booze knowing that you shouldn't be doing that? Right? I knew what was right or wrong. I knew that I didn't want to drink anymore. And I even found myself walking to the liquor store, yelling at myself, talking out loud, you know, what's wrong with me? Why do I keep doing this? I knew that I wanted to stop drinking. I knew how it was impacting my life. Right? And I couldn't stop. I couldn't turn my feet around and just go home. Right? And just want to mention this, that back in the late 80s, when somebody was walking down the street talking out loud and screaming out loud, or back then it meant something different. Today it just means you're on the phone, right? But there wasn't Bluetooth back then, right? It meant something different. It meant you were crazy, right? And I certainly can relate to this insanity, right? Because by the time I got to that point where I saw that I could, was telling myself, I knew that I shouldn't be doing this, and I would do it anyway, Right? Then I was doing the same thing over and over again, not expecting different results anymore. And I was getting in touch with a hopelessness that would eventually bring me here. Right? It says, the almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass or a beer do not crowd into our mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, as they did many times for me, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is the complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Right? Here I knew the hot stove was going to burn me. Why do I keep touching it? Why do I keep touching it anyway? Right? Right. Thinking the drink through, I did not have the power to not drink. It says, the alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time, so here's how, or perhaps he doesn't think at all. Right? And that was certainly me. Yet still, I come across a lot of people when I'm working with them that say, yeah, I have a choice today. I haven't drank in 20 years. Today I have a choice. Don't you need two things to have a choice of anything? Right? If you have one thing, I don't have a choice of chairs up here. Right? You'd have to bring another chair up here for me to have a choice. Right? So with time, if I'm in a recovered state, can I choose to drink? Is that really a choice for me? If you think about it, it's never really about choice. It's about sanity. From an insane place, I would choose not to drink and drink anyway. Right? From a sane place, right? If I were to say, come on, I know you all look like a real fun bunch of people. Let's go down to the bar and let's go have some drinks. Right? Right now. Right? You know, maybe a couple of you would go with me, but not most of you wouldn't. Right? Yeah, I'm paying. No, Jeanette's paying. From a sane place, I can't choose to drink. So I still don't have a choice. If I have a choice today, it's implying I have an alcoholic mind and I could drink it possibly or maybe not. But if I've been restored to sanity, I can't choose to drink. Right? And there's certainly people that will argue that, you know, and I, even though I say that, but it would be kind of like saying, today I have a choice to jump out in front of a bus. Right? Not if you're sane. Right? So the question here is not, do I develop choice in drinking? It's, can I see that from this place that I'm operating from an insane place and I can't choose not to drink, right? And what I need is a level of insanity in my life, right, to save me. And I can't do that on my own. Because the second part of step one, my mind, what I have to get in touch with is the depth of my insanity, my alcoholic insanity, the obsessions that come into my mind that take me to that drink when I know I shouldn't be drinking. Or sometimes I don't even want to think about it at all and I just drink. Yet over and over again, it just takes me back. Sometimes I know I'm going to drink too much and sometimes I commit to drinking less, right? But when I'm clear on the first part of step one, is that once I take that first drink, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be one drink. I don't know if it's going to be three drinks or 30 drinks. I don't know if it's going to be 1 hour, 3 hours, 3 days. Right? I don't know what's going to happen with that. But I have to see that I have a mind, right, that takes me back to this place over and over and over again, knowing that I absolutely don't want to live that way anymore. And that's insanity. Just like what Bill says, like putting your hand on a hot stove over and over again. On top of 25, where it says there is a solution, it says almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confessions of our shortcomings, which this process requires for its successful consummation. They're right. Almost none of us like doing the steps, doing the process, right? Because it's if done right, I'm having a spiritual experience of the painful variety each step of the way. Right? It talks about later as having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, right? Which they're talking about here is that something is I'm supposed to awaken to a little bit more of me each way through this process. And certainly a lot of you have had spiritual experiences. I'm sure I have. The trouble is those warm, fuzzy spiritual experiences you usually don't remember. You know which ones I remember? They're the ones that really hurt. The ones that you wake up to that you know are just causing destruction in your life and realizing that you can't do anything about it, right? The real painful ones are the ones that really move me, right? But we saw that it really worked in others, and we've come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. That tells me that I have a responsibility to be an example, because when new people come into the rooms, right, if they end up in a room where everybody's ready to commit suicide, they just don't drink, right? You know, it wouldn't be very attractive to me, right? Right? Not that you shouldn't have a place to go, but you have to, you know, but hopefully you have people to discuss that stuff too, and hopefully a program that'll take you beyond a place of suffering and beyond a place of powerlessness, right? So, therefore, when we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. I like to call these a simple kit of spiritual power tools, right? A spiritual power tool would separate it from a self-help program, meaning I don't look at this stuff because I'm trying to see how I can fix myself. Right? I'm looking at this process to show me how I cannot do anything about this stuff on my own and that I need something else, right? Otherwise, I'll stay powerless. Right? It's not about staying powerless, but finding a solution for that powerlessness. It goes on to say, we have found much in heaven and been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. And this place that it's talking about here is not a place up there. It says rocketed, but it says rocketed into. And I believe that they're talking about rocketed to a place, into a place deep down inside, to this vast inner landscape, which I've never been able to live from. And it's an experience that only happened to me after finishing this process. You know, but certainly the basis of this whole thing is seeing why I need to do this. And I have to see that this insanity and the level of destruction that it could cause in my life if something doesn't happen. Right? It says that we recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It says I can recover from this thing. There's a story in here about Carl Jung and his meeting with a guy named Roland Hazard. And he talks some about what he believed he saw, how he saw other alcoholics in the past recover. And I think it's really important to know, because it also describes a spiritual experience for me. Right? And it's also important to note that Roland Hazard, I'm sorry, Dr. Carl Jung didn't know how to create this in us. Where he's talking to Roland Hazard, and Roland Hazard says, he just told Roland that there's no hope for him. So you see, Roland, that's a great name for an alcoholic, isn't it? Roland Hazard. he came from an affluent family, had lots of money, had businesses, was well known in the community, but he was an alcoholic, caused a lot of destruction around that. Had tried different avenues for help and ended up going to Europe to meet with Carl Jung. He tried to meet with Freud, but Freud didn't necessarily like working with alcoholics and said he was too busy. And so he referred him to Carl Jung, and Carl Jung agreed to meet with him, but Roland had to go to Europe to do that. And things went well. He felt confident that what he got was sufficient, that he had learned enough about his alcoholism to not drink anymore. And he got back on the boat to come back to the United States, and they had to carry him off the boat. He didn't even make it home before drinking again. And he went back to the doctor and asked the doctor, which is this, he asked the doctor if there's any hope for him. The doctor said this: "You have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Chronic, it means persistent and recurring." And I could certainly relate to having a persistent and recurring condition when it came to drinking. "I have never seen one single case recover where that state of mind exists to the extent that it does in you." And our friend felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. This is on page 27, by the way. "Yes," said the doctor. "Yes," he said to the doctor, "is there no exception?" "Yes," replied the doctor, "there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times." Now here it is. "Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena." Phenomena to me means I could see that it happened, but I can't explain why it happened. Right? "They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements." Right? Means everything has to change. And here's what it has to look like. "Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces in the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them." Right? That, to me, is a great description of a spiritual awakening. Right. And that's what Roland Hazard said we need. But they did not have the ability or the know-how to instill that in us. Because it says, "In fact, I've been trying to produce some such emotional rearrangement within you. With many individuals, probably hard drinkers, the methods which I employed are successful, but I have never been successful with an alcoholic of your description." So, and basically he's talking about an alcoholic, you know, with a chronic problem, persistent and recurring drinking, right? No matter what is happening around you, no matter what you try to do for your problem, right? That the consequences of my situation, the consequences of my life, even though I'm aware of it, were not enough to stop me from taking that first drink. You know, and it is just plain insanity. Now, there's a lot more that I'm in this book than what we're talking about this weekend, and you know, it would probably take weeks to go through the whole thing, so I'm trying to hit the high points here. So, just so you know that when you actually sit down and go through this, it can become a much more involved process and really crack you open to the truth of your own experience. Chapter 3, more about alcoholism, page 30. It says, "Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. I still wonder if I'm like you in some ways. You know, there's a part of me that wants to be different, right? But then there's another part of me that doesn't want to be different. So it gets real confusing, right? But I certainly, when I was new, had the idea that I was going to figure this thing out some other way besides this God thing. You know, it irritated me when you guys would talk about God and powerlessness, and you know, because it partly had a lot to do with just not understanding it. Right? I still had this idea that I was going to figure out what you guys really have going on here. Doesn't matter what you're saying, something else must be happening here, and I was going to figure it out and hopefully eventually just be able to go away and live my life and just drink socially, like, you know, like I always was, right? But that was the delusion, like I was always drinking socially, even though I ended up drinking alone in the end, right? And something had to happen, and it says on page 30, in the second indented paragraph, it says we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. And it said that this is the first step in recovery. Not that I'm powerless. That's not the first step in recovery. But conceding, I had to learn that I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. It says the delusion that we are like other people, or presently, like even now, has to be smashed. Right? I'm not like other people. You know, this time of year, you know, there's a lot of different gatherings. You know, when I was with the corporation, I frequently went to their functions, the parties, and they usually had an annual Christmas party. And last year, I remember at the Christmas party, I'm sitting at a table with all the people in my office that I was close to in my office, and they're all drinking wine, and there's booze tickets that they're getting passed around for complimentary drinks, and wine was pouring all around me, and a friend of mine turned to me and said, "Have a drink, Dan. It's Christmas." And I said, "No, I can't drink. I don't drink. And they said, "Come on, it's Christmas." And they started pestering me. And it's like, someone says, "Dan, one drink is not going to hurt you." And my mind says, all right, this is 19 years sober, right? Back then, last year. And it says, that's right. One drink won't hurt me. Right? But the immediate thought after that is yes, but I'm not like you. I'm different than other people. My experience confirms that once I took that first drink, I've given up my time. I've given up my position, if there is one, in Alcoholics Anonymous as someone that's supposed to know something about this thing, right? The life as I know it changes, right? All this stuff happens from this one drink. And if I gave all that up, right, the potential for the second drink gets a lot easier, right? Not that I'm going to tell you guys what happened after that party, not yet at least, right? A couple drinks, you know, go home. I've already, in my mind, I've lost, you know, I've lost my sobriety, and I'm now lying about it to everybody that knows me because I'm not ready to tell everybody yet. Right? And then it starts to weigh on me, and then a week later, I think another drink would be fine because I only had a couple drinks at the party. Right? Maybe a couple more because now I bought a bottle, right, to bring home, and I have that couple drinks. Right? And I don't know what will happen after that. I don't know. I really don't know what the progression will be. You talk to different people that drink again, and it's different for different people. I've seen people go months before just completely disappearing, right, back into their disease, and the only thing I can pull from is my past experience. And if I don't learn from my past experience, I'm doomed to repeat it. I have to have an experience with the truth that I'm an alcoholic, and that has to happen deep down inside here, not up here. Because up here, it's going to tell me all kinds of things. I have to know in my heart what the truth is. Because they said one drink won't hurt me. Up here said, that's right. But in here, in my innermost self, in my gut, I knew that I'm not like these other people. One drink won't hurt them. I don't know where the first drink or the second drink or the third drink is going to take me. Right? Either that day or what's going to follow. I have no way of knowing. So the delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, even now, has to be smashed. It says, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. So, there's a story on page 37 about a guy that's affectionately known as the Jaywalker. And I like to mix up the words a little bit. I'm going to jump just a couple paragraphs ahead just to validate what I'm doing, where it says on the 38, on the one second indented paragraph down, where it says, you may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we substitute alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly, right? And that however intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? So let's see how we can relate to the jaywalker story if we substitute alcoholism for jaywalking. It says, our behavior is as absurd. This is on 37, by the way, last indented paragraph. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of hanging out at bars. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he goes on major benders several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut out the drinking altogether. But presently he gets drunk again, and this time has a medical complication, ends up in the hospital. Within a week after leaving the hospital, he's back drinking at the bar. He tells you that he's decided to stop drinking for good, but in a few weeks, he's off drinking again on another bender. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continued promise to be careful or to keep out of the bars altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce, and he's held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the drinking idea out of his head. He shuts himself up in a rehab, hoping to mend his ways. But the day he comes out, he races back to the bar, which sets off another bender. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? Right. So, what I have to see here is that what this mental condition is, what they're talking about here, is the alcoholic insanity. I have a mind that can't seem to grasp all these consequences with enough force, nor do I have the power to do anything about the way I'm living, whether I see these consequences going on around me or if I ignore the consequences around me. I cannot stop the insanity on my own. Do not have the power, right, to change my thinking. So, the This book promises that I can recover from this condition. Talked about it in the beginning, that what we recover from is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It doesn't say that we'll always be recovering from it. It doesn't say that we'll always stay sick. Right? What I have to see through this stuff is this just outlines what's wrong with me. What's wrong with me that I haven't been able to do anything about? The thought of drinking would pop into my mind, and I couldn't get it out of my mind. Right? But a question they're leading up to is got to be answered, and we haven't quite got to it yet. Goes on to give us some more stories about some insanities. It talks about a guy named Fred, right, on page 39. Says he's a well-known partner at a well-known, Fred is a partner at a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He has a fine home, is happily married, and is a father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual. It's painting a good picture about over Fred, isn't it? Aren't they? All right, let me get some water. All right. Yet he is alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that it might be worse than he realized. Right? And how many of us have thought that the problem, looking back, maybe the problem isn't quite as bad as I was thinking it was. Right? I can do that today. I mean, you know, after a couple decades of not drinking, it's like, was it really that bad? Right? We'll get into that later in step 12. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so. In spite of his character and standing, Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. We told him what we knew about alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that his humiliating experience plus the knowledge he had acquired would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. Right? And I believe that that's what a lot of programs will give you, is a lot of self-knowledge. Right? There's elaborate explanations of what alcohol does to your system and where the craving comes from. And there's even pills that you could take that will stop your drinking for you. Right? But I don't know that that's had much success either for a chronic alcoholic. I mean, how many times do you hear someone who's taken Anabuse and drank anyway? Right? Right. But what I also have to see, though, is the knowledge of my condition. I mean, I don't have to have any elaborate scientific explanations about how alcoholism works in my life. I knew it was killing me. Right? What more do you need to know than that? And I couldn't stop. Right? So now he's thinking that now that he knows something about this problem, he's going to be okay. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day, we were told that he was back in the hospital, and this time, he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told is most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns. Yet he was flat on his back. And let him tell you about it. So basically, here's a person who had all the knowledge about his condition, yet drank anyway. Right? I have to see that there's something more than step one that I need to get here. Right? And step one has got to convince me that I need to move forward. So the experience with my own truth about my drinking is what has to drive me forward in this process. I didn't come to this thing thinking that I needed power. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I just had to figure this out somehow, thinking I had the power. You guys were saying things like, we're powerless, you know, and what does that really mean anyway, right? I had to see that there is an insanity that can come out of nowhere, even like with Fred. You know, to talk about what a great guy Fred was, right? How much ability he had. You know, I mean, Fred goes on to say in the bottom of the page, one day I went to Washington to present accounting evidence to a government bureau, right? Fred was an intelligent guy. You'd think someone like that could figure this thing out, right? Right. But what I think the point of the story is that my best abilities to figure this thing out never got me anywhere. I could not figure out why this thing kept happening. You know, why did that idea that would come into my head that outweighed all other ideas continue to come into my life and continue to take me to that first drink and lose control? So, I'm going to kind of stop here because I don't want to go into the next part because I don't want to cut it down halfway. I don't want to split it into two sections. But I'm going to stop here with a question. If I can relate to losing control when I start, then the question is, why do I keep starting? And if I've seen through my experience that idea, that obsession kept coming back into my mind that took me to that first drink, that explains why I kept going back to that first drink, right? That there's this alcoholic insanity, this mental condition that continually took me back to that first drink where I ended up drinking more than I should have. Continually, over and over again. So the question, though, is, seeing that I have this mental state, if I'm new, I need to know, where does that come from? You know, what is it that sets up that mental state? But the thing is even if I've been around here for a while, a year, 2 years, 20 years, I still need to know, what is it that overcomes people? What is it in people's life that sets up the condition conducive for that insanity to return? Right? That would be important to know, wouldn't it? Right? What is it? What is the part of this problem that sets up the condition in my life conducive for the insanity to return, the mental state to return, which ultimately takes me back to that first drink? And that's where I'll pick up from when we get back after lunch. Thank you.